and appreciate the office part of the agenda in welcoming you. We were actually supposed to have some discussion around our program, and there are issues which we may have to look at tomorrow or using the day of today in an agenda item that I have on the list. So obviously I do have the apologies. Honorable Member Mbuyane Mafiesen Mwate. So those are the members where there's apologies. The party business, it's both Mbuyane and Mafiesen, and it's actually a medical issue relating to Mwate. So I hope that we should be able as a committee to accept the apologies of the members. Obviously, in terms of the agenda before us, it's an item that we need to actually look at. So I will just check with members if ever there's any issue relating to apologies that we want to raise. But those are the apologies you've got, and I'm sure they are acceptable in the way that they are presented. So if ever there's no comment from the members, can I just say for the adoption of the agenda, there is actually a request for committee business. In the last committee meeting, we thought we can discuss how our program should actually be structured and what are the kind of issues that we have to follow through. So because we actually were not able to do that in our last meeting, I thought we would actually then do it today. The committee business will actually help us just to look at our program, because immediately after our previous meeting, we did circulate the proposed program, but I thought it would be important that one speaks to that. So item committee business is actually trying to look at that. The next one is the briefing by the DTI. So I think on that one, we can be able to actually confirm that there's a circulated presentation, and there is actually the team from the DTI present to actually work with us through the presentation as a committee. And the last part, it will be just the item of closing, if ever maybe there are issues that we may have to highlight or comment to. Can I actually just check if ever we are comfortable to proceed as a committee with those items listed on the agenda as proposed? Baba Mulder, Tring.
Chair, I move for the adoption of the program agenda.
Honorable Munda, move. Baba Tring. Thank you very much. So can I just say, in terms of just the issue relating to committee business, unless there's an objection, so you're fine, you can proceed. Yeah, Pongona, you wanted to say something?
I do, Chair. I just want to ask, last week we were supposed to have a meeting on the 19th. I was not here, and I hear it was postponed. When is it going to be?
That's the reason why I want to take you through,
okay.
And then I'll take comments and questions immediately after that. Right. So it's precisely for that reason that we thought we should actually have this session. Yeah. Okay. Andre?
Just to inform members, the program that you have in front of you is incorrect. We did email the correct program to members. The one that you have in front of you is not correct. Well, we will get you a copy. But you have the corrected email copy version thereof. The one that you have in front of you is incorrect. Yeah, but the one that was emailed to you last week is the correct one. But we're making copies. I just discovered that the wrong version was printed for members. Yeah.
Can we have that withdrawn? But I think all the members did receive the email in terms of actually the program. If we can then be able to proceed in that way. I did actually make a copy from the one which I was sent by email, but I think what we may have to do is just to go through that. One has actually suggested that we can be able to look at the committee business which will also be the issue of the adoption of the program of the committee.
Good morning, Chair. I want to propose that we move that agenda item so that we don't leave this PC without having adopted the amended program, that the secretariat prints us copy and the copies, and we'll deal with it at the end of the agenda.
I think that's a creative suggestion. Let's actually look at the business of the committee as the last part of our agenda. And then we can actually then go to the presentation. As I said, that we do actually have a team here. I'm sure you'll just indicate by show of hand, Ms. Malebu Mabiche Thompson, who's here, DDG. Do you say EDAT?
I did.
So because I'm a Zulu guy, I see. It sounds like EDAT. Yeah, it's IDED. Okay. Then we actually have Ms. Shireen Osman, Chief Director. Welcome. We do actually have also Ntombi Matomela. She's almost part of the committee, but she's very consistent. So we do have Susan Mangole, Chief Director. Thank you very much. Welcome. And then we do actually have Nonkululeko Shinga. Thank you very much. Chief Director, Innovation and Technology. And then I think in terms of actually the team that is actually coming to engage with us, we have before. So I'm sure all the members do have the presentation before them. So can I then actually allow Mem Abiche Thompson to be able to take us through, and I'm sure we'll actually then get the team supporting, take us through the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honourable members. The presentation we are asked to do today is on the annual performance of the incentives for the year 2018, 2019. So the presentation will be structured as follows. We'll just quickly deal with the strategic objectives of the department and the objectives of our division, which is no longer called IDEC, but IFD, which is Industrial Financing Division. And then we will look at the clusters of incentive programs that we manage. We'll look at the performance of the various incentive programs, and then conclude the discussion by also looking at individual performance of each program. Regarding the strategic objectives of the department, we've got six key objectives that link to the vision and mission of the department. The first and I think most important one is to continuously build a capable department that is able to respond to the needs of South Africa's economic citizens, to coordinate contributions of various government departments and state agencies towards the economic plan or economic path of the country, to improve and align economic policies of various agencies and actors within the state, and to provide an environment where we can broaden participation in the economy, particularly from those who were previously marginalized, and to provide a predictable, a competitive, equitable, and socially responsible investment environment where trade and enterprise development can thrive. So in order for us to contribute towards those objectives, we sit in the Industrial Development Financing Division. The role of our division is to grow a sustainable, competitive, economy through supporting enterprises and ensuring that they have industrial finance that is both accessible and in support of national priorities. We do that through evidence-based designing, administrating, and monitoring of manufacturing programs that again are aligned to national priorities, and we focus on labor intensity or labor intensive sectors. We also do that by building partnerships with industry in the main and also various other players in the economy in order to accelerate growth for the manufacturing sector and the internationally traded sectors of the economy. Given that we are a client-facing division of the department, we have a charter that we abide by. That charter has four pillars, and that is integrity, transparency, performance excellence, and caring for the client that we provide support to. And through that charter, we are obliged to treat customers with honesty, ethically, and professionally. We also are obliged to care for investors, for entrepreneurs, for communities, and also the environment. We are accountable and we take full responsibility of our actions, and we continuously learn within the environment where we operate so that we can continuously improve how we provide support to industry. We provide that support to industry in five main ways, or in five clusters of groups of support. The first being a manufacturing investment cluster, where we have a number of incentives, starting with the Black Industrialist Incentive, the 12i Tax Allowance Incentive, the Automotive Incentive Scheme, the Agro-Processing Support Scheme, the Aquaculture Development Scheme, and our support for incubation. And we also have a cluster for innovation. Again, here we are supporting government's priority of readying the nation for the fourth industrial revolution and ensuring that in that revolution we are not just consumers of goods, but we also enter that revolution as producers of goods. And in that cluster, we've got the technology and human resource for industry program, and we also have the support program for industrial innovation. We also support services sector, and here in the services sector, our priorities are around film and television, and also global business services, where we encourage businesses abroad to locate some parts of their value chain in South Africa. And in that way, we assist the country to attract export revenue. We've got infrastructure support that we provide. This is to the special economic zones. And we also provide critical infrastructure, particularly around the industrial parks. And we support a cluster development program. And I think in that regard, those are some of the programs that we were trying out. And there are those that will be phased out, with some of the support programs being included in either the special economic zone or the critical infrastructure program going forward. Then we've got the export promotion cluster. In that export promotion cluster, we support market access, international market access for our domestic manufacturers. We do that for sector-specific initiatives, and we also do that in support of marketing and investment that our local manufacturers may require. We support also capital projects that our manufacturers undertake internationally, of course, with the understanding from our manufacturers that there is a need to draw on local products as part of those manufacturing initiatives. Regarding our performance for the year 2018-19, we had approvals to the value of 8.9 billion. This is how much we were able to approve for support. So the projects that we would have approved would then be worth 41.4 billion in terms of the total investment of those of the project. That against a projection, an initial projection of 31.3 billion. So at the time when we were approving, the projection was that the investments would equate to 31.3, but the actual investment that has been made is actually 10 billion more than what was initially projected. Now, of the 8.9 billion that we committed to industry to support, we were able to disperse 5.1 billion. And members would recall that that 5.1 billion is actually the budget that we were provided for that particular financial year. So for our program to support industry at a time when the economy is not at its best, we were able to provide full support in line with our budget. Now, our support is broken down into three main packages. We do loans, which we work with the IDC to provide. We also provide tax allowances, which we work with SARS for. And then we provide also grants that the department or the division itself manages. Of the companies that we have supported, we have supported companies with a triple BEE status of between 1 and level 4, and of those it was 82%, and we've also supported those at level 5 to 8 to the tune, I think they were around 10%, and there were those that are not required to have a BEE status. This would be those in the form of our special economic zones and our industrial parks. So for the manufacturing sector, as I indicated previously, our role there is to ensure that we are boosting our manufacturing, and through this support we are catapulting economic inclusion. We also are driving industrial innovation. We're building skills for future jobs, and we are encouraging not only foreign direct investment, but also exports from South Africa to foreign destinations. A provincial breakdown of the support that we have provided, as members would see from the screen, that a large chunk of the support is actually in Gauteng, and then followed very closely by KZN and the Western Cape, and we've also provided support in the Eastern Cape, in Mpumalanga as well, in Limpopo, Gauteng, Northwest, and the Northern Cape. So most of the provinces are represented here, I think with the exception of the Free State, which remains a concern for us, just on the basis of some of the investments that are not coming through that we would have expected that they would be at a stage where they would be ready for support. The sectors that we have supported in agriculture, that would be value-added agriculture around packaging and polishing of goods to ready them for export. Agro-processing, that's when we change the nature of an agricultural product in the main, where maybe it moves from being an apple to becoming juice. We've also supported activities in that sector. And we've supported automotive, chemicals, pharmaceuticals and plastics, clothing, textile, leather and footwear, an important sector for the economy, particularly for employment of women, and also increasingly mineral beneficiation project. So the work that we have done has supported around 31,525. These are direct jobs that somebody can go and audit and see. It does not include the indirect jobs that are obviously created when you have a manufacturing entity in a locality. Take, for example, a VW in Uitenhage and the number of enterprises that are just supported by the mere existence of that company. For the auto sector, I think the estimation is that it is 1 to 5. That means one direct job that you see in the auto sector will probably be supporting another 5 jobs outside that main project. So for the manufacturing cluster, as I indicated, Black Industrialist Program is one of the programs that was launched in around 2015 with a target of 100 Black Industrialists. As members would have received a briefing before, we've exceeded that target, but for the financial year in question, it's 50 more approvals that were then made. And for those 50 approvals, most of these enterprises, given the fact that they are newer, they're obviously investing in technologies and capabilities that assist them to be resource efficient, both energy efficient and water use efficient, which is a very important development for our manufacturing path to make sure that our manufacturers are as efficient as possible. And now, they have injected 490 million. We have injected that 490 million into supporting this project with an investment turnaround that we expect of about 5.1 billion from the Black Industrialist Program for the year in question. The ownership breakdown of the BI program in terms of the people that have received support, it's 54% Black African, 30% Indian, and around 28% female ownership. Those are some of the examples of the projects that we have supported. Knox Oil being one of those. What they do is they clean oil and they clean oil spills, and they reuse that oil in various to support various other economic activities. Proximo is another one. Proximo, they are in Gauteng, and they didn't only install a mill, they also are now increasing local content. That is material that they are now sourcing from South Africa, which was previously imported, which is another important part of most of our manufacturing programs to assist with increasing markets for other enterprises domestically by way of substituting imports, where we definitely have a competitive advantage in producing those goods locally. Sycamore is one of those that we have supported. Sycamore is in KZN and it's 100% Indian owned and a level one triple BEE contributor. And at a point where we agreed to support them, they were sitting at 93 jobs, and they created another 21. Like I said, another 25 in this enterprise. And the more they grow and the more they create jobs, the more downstream and upstream jobs are created because of that requirement for local content procurement. Then on the 12 ITEX incentive, here our aim is to promote manufacturing in the country by investing in manufacturing assets and also the training of staff in order to improve labor productivity and the skill profile of our labor force. That's for the year in question. We have supported investment of over $1.8 billion, and then of that investment, there's a projected investment from small, medium enterprises that will enable them to create jobs, and that investment is valued at $136 million. We're just sharing with you the example of Aspen Pharmacare, which is a South African pharmaceutical company that also has received support under this scheme. Members would have noticed from the investment, or rather from the incentive book that you have received, that you see that there's a very good balance between supporting fairly old companies, which are our main job creators, and supporting new companies, which are now also helping us into an industrial path that readies us for the fourth industrial revolution. Now, for the AIS, which is the automotive incentive scheme. This is our support program that is aimed at building and sustaining our auto sector. We do this by supporting companies with new and replacement models, and we also support component manufacturers. We make sure that jobs are created and that we are strengthening our value chain domestically. One of the requirements for this scheme, which was introduced in this year, was that there must be a job loss standstill. So if a company is going to lose any jobs, we wouldn't be in any position to support them. So all these companies that you are seeing here are companies that will then be creating jobs, and with a guarantee that the jobs that they have on the line are not going to be shared through this investment or any other activity or decision of that company going forward for the investment period that is around 3 to 5 years. We've also given an example of Lemo Tech, just again highlighting the fact that what we are saying is that old and new companies require support. So there are no companies per se that find themselves in a place where they don't really need government support in one way or the other. But what we have strategically done is make sure that the weight of the support, I think, goes more to the newer entities for specific economic reasons that sometimes are unique to new enterprises. Then we've got the agro-processing support scheme. In this scheme, we aim to encourage South Africans to beneficiate agricultural products so that there is investment both in upstream and downstream activities in this sector. We also are wanting to ensure through our support that there is transformation so that we are building for the future. And in this scheme, what we have supported for the financial year in question, 2,283 direct jobs, including to those 2,071 jobs that were retained, and for every investment that we've made in this sector, we were able to secure, for every 1 rand that we've made, we were able to secure 5 rand worth of investment. The good thing about this incentive program, it helps us to consume, to use what we produce, and for the entities that we have supported, 84% of their inputs are actually locally sourced. Not just locally procured, but locally sourced, meaning that they are produced, they are grown right here in South Africa. Here, I think the example that many of the members would be aware of that we shared for the presentation is Sea Harvest, and members will see there's more of these examples in the investment in the incentive report that we shared with the committee. Aquaculture is another one of our important incentives, and here we support both coastal and inland provinces. And what we want to highlight here is that what is important for us is a growing number of inland provinces that are now coming on board using fresh water to produce a number of marine species that can be consumed. And in that regard, we've increased our production of tilapia, of mussels, of trout, of catfish, and we've also increased the work that we do to add value to those, where we clean, we can, and we package them. And we are looking at this becoming an important sector also for import replacement and export. La Rosta is our example there. La Rosta is only 4 years old, having been established in 2016. Interestingly, La Rosta is in Gauteng, and they are a level one BBBE contributor. I spoke earlier about companies that are helping us to ready ourselves for the industrial revolution and to ensure that in this revolution, unlike the previous revolutions where we freely engage with the rest of the world as consumers, that we start being at the cutting edge of technology innovation, and we become part of the producers as far as that's concerned. We've got two programs here, the Technology and Human Resource for industry program, STRIP, and also the support program for innovation. With these programs, we aim to boost South Africa's technology development and skills development for jobs of the future. We have supported 79 black students and 45 female students who were part of university programs for developing new technologies. We've worked with 10 higher education institutions. This will include institutions that were from previously marginalized areas and also dominated by previously or historically marginalized parts of our communities, universities such as University of Venda, University of Limpopo, and also right here in the Western Cape, University of the Western Cape. They've participated in this in addition to our established universities, which were not previously excluded, like your University of Wits, University of Stellenbosch, and the like. Here, 104 billion was approved for black-owned SMMEs, and also 61 million approved for female-owned SMMEs. Now, again, these are new technologies, new processes that have previously either not been used in the economy before, or that are going to be new, not just in the South African economy, but also globally. Here, we are really investing in the future. We shared with members the example of a footwear training institute, and this project, according to the beneficiaries, would have not been been feasible to take place, and they've been able to undertake the project using a number of PhD and master's students, and they are dealing with materials, and some of these materials, I think in future we are going to see them in our footwear, and they are those that are are already in play, where people have developed technologies that will place South Africa in the value addition chain of plane manufacturing. And we're very, very proud of some of these initiatives. So with the support program for industrial innovation, here we aim to promote technology advancements through provision of financial assistance to develop innovative products and processes. We have injected to these SMMEs that really very few people are willing to invest in because of some of the risk profile of the entities and the products that they want to bring onto the market. We've invested 4 million into the entities. The project are developing into commercial viability, and we also would be getting patents, local patents for this project. We are helping them with global patents as well. The example we've shared with the committee, and I think more detail is in the incentive report, is of a company called Esquire. And what they do, surgical swaps or dressing. Many members will say, what's new with that? It's the materials that they are now using for those which are antimicrobial, and we're hoping that this will assist companies here in South Africa and also for export purposes, for us to also come into the health sector, providing innovative products that are responding to the increasing needs in the health sector. The interesting bit about this company is 51% black female owned, and it's a level one triple BEE contributor. Of course, the jobs we are seeing are quite few now, because they are in development stage. But the product itself, when it does hit the market, we're hoping for much more jobs. And again, a foothold for South Africa in the R&D value chain of the health sector. Then on the services side, we support global business services and also phone and television. I'll start with the global business services. Here with global business services, Our priority is to increase export revenue for the country and also increase job creation. This is our job driving one of our job driving sectors. For the companies that we've supported, they have retained 16,000 jobs. The target that we have for this sector for the next 5 years, which we've agreed with industry on, is 500,000 jobs that they will be bringing to South Africa from various global destinations. So you would see members with the report that we will be presenting to you in the next financial year, a significant amount of jobs based on the targets that we've agreed with industry. And we are sharing with you the example of CCI. CCI is in KwaZulu-Natal. They employ around, I think, 60% of young women aged between 18 to 25 years who would otherwise have been unemployed. And they are also growing phenomenally. In one company, 4,924 jobs, and they would be extending those jobs in the future. And I know in this current financial year, they are already about 5,000 jobs. Film and television. Here we have supported around 25 emerging black filmmakers. To the tune of 90 million. We're proud that we now can add to the library of movies that we have supported productions from Limpopo and the Northwest. With this incentive, our aim is not only to tell the South African story, but it is also to open or facilitate avenues for our local producers, our local various capabilities, including in makeup, in wardrobe, in various parts of the value chain of making movies. We are exposing them to the international arena and making sure that through that they can get contracts even beyond producing some of the films, although, of course, our support is on film production. 28% of the support has gone to female-owned productions, and then 52% to black-owned productions. I'm sharing with you again one of our productions that is internationally renowned, and we're sharing with you some of the awards that this production has received. More of this information is shared with you in the incentive report. Then on the infrastructure support program, this is where our special economic zone program is, and critical infrastructure program. The special economic zones members will know we've got a zone in Limpopo, in Gauteng, in the Free State. We've got two in the Western Cape. We've got a zone in Mpumalanga. We've got two in KwaZulu-Natal. And we also have two in KZN. And with this program, we are creating a clustering of activities and investor-friendly localities where it is easy for an investor to come and tend tree very quickly so that we can now support the creation of jobs at a quicker rate than we would ordinarily be able to. We do similarly with the critical infrastructure program in the way that we support our industrial parks. In this program, we supported 12 industrial parks, all of whom are located in former homelands. They are owned by provincial governments and they are managed by those entities. The work that we are currently busy with is working with this park to make sure that they are investor ready, and we can now go with collateral to investors for them to locate in this park. We want to support both local and international investors locating in this park. For our export promotion cluster, this is where we support enterprises for marketing and also for investment assistance. We support them at a sectoral level with our sector-specific assistance and also with the capital project visibility program. With our export marketing and investment assistance, here again, the focus is on growing our international footprint in terms of the products that we export to the rest of the world. We support all manner of enterprises here. Just in the financial year in question, 307 SMEs were supported across 12 different industries. We've shared with the members an example in the clothing and textile sector. And we've also shared with the members the various destinations that we have supported enterprises to go to. What is important here is also, I think, a recognition that our local market is not sufficient to help us with the challenge of reducing jobs. It's important that we explore other markets and we take full advantage of those markets so that we're able to produce to a sufficient enough extent to deal with some of the domestic challenges that we need to deal with. With that, members, I thank you for the time.
Maybe the first point one would like to raise is to say to committee members, we are in good hands in terms of the presentation. I think we always, as a committee, make a comment on the delegation sent by the department. But I think for today we can say safe hands, because it's only the female and safe hands from the department. So I think it's important for us, because we always raise that as a point. Maybe the second issue, which may be one that we should actually be able to look at, there's issues of incentive. One big issue which I think is always important to look at, we don't see it as competition, we see it as the broadening of the economic development space when we look at the issue of black industrialists. So always it's important to have a sense on how are we contributing to the growth and development of our economy in terms of the approach which we're linking in terms of black industrialists. Obviously, it will link to the kind of relationship we're having or building with the BEE Commission. So I think we will take comments and questions from honorable members. And I think the small point which I thought I should check as well, there is actually a reflection which you've actually highlighted of declining applications. It might be important just to know what might be issues that would actually contribute towards that, because that's very important. We have looked internally. We're hoping that we can actually have a look at foreign investment in this space, which we're actually looking at in terms of incentives. If ever there's anything happening in that space, growing our own side, but at the level of the foreign investment that's coming through. Note hands of members. Cuthbert raised hand number one, and then we'll see Mutaung, Ring, Yako, Mulder, and then there's Whip, Judith, and then Mantash. So can you go in that order, Cuthbert?
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I'd just like to start off by saying that this is generally one of the better performing divisions within the department, and I think that we do value your good work. I think the projects relating to BPS services, which I think we long ago lost the competitive edge to countries like India and Mauritius, it's good to see that we're bringing in that kind of work. It's very labour intensive and also is not necessarily all that highly skilled. So I think that is a very good move in the right direction. However, there's some concerns that I have, Chair, and if you look at the incentive transfer to Aspen and you note the funders of the President's internal election campaign, you'll notice that Aspen was a very large contributor. And in light of that, I'd like to ask whether or not the division is under the impression that there's any conflict of interest, considering the fact that they in fact funded Mr. Ramaphosa's campaign. The second issue that I would like to raise, Chair, is that I'm led to believe that there's a number of AIS approvals that are waiting, that have been waiting for several months. And it is as a result of the adjudication committee not sitting for a period of time, by virtue of their term not having been renewed yet. Could we get maybe a little bit of progress regarding that? And then the second issue is also in terms of the 12i allowances. What is happening? I believe that there's also a bit of a delay there, and surely there are severe economic implications if we delay these, and also this relates to investor certainty and the like. Then the last question that I'd like to ask, Chair, is just regarding the fund that was set up by automotive OEMs, where they would be able to forego BEE requirements in place of providing funds to a central fund that would then be used for transformation and development. Could you maybe get a progress update on what's happening with that fund, what is the possible size of that fund, and you know where they are at this moment in time? Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. Next one.
Thanks, Chair. I have only three questions. One, regarding the challenge with BBB levels of companies, its branding. In collaboration with BBB Commission, how do you deal with this branding issue? Secondly, beneficiaries that are already being funded by NEF, how do you identify them? Lastly, the requirement for automotive incentive scheme, does it include the commitment of local procurement?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, and
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just maybe perhaps a comment. Firstly, we appreciate the report that has been tabled and given to us this morning. But I also noticed that there were one or two slides where we did not have the updated information. So we would appreciate some of the updated information with regards to the report that is before us. Secondly, Chair, are we... this particular report is, I think, ends 2019. We also would have appreciated maybe first and second quarter report as well, because that would give us an idea in terms of the update and then also an advanced preparation before we actually get the 2019-2020 report. Then page 6 speaks about, on page 6 of the slide, perhaps the question there is what is the total budget? What is the total budget for your department, and what are your targets that you had set and targets reached? So, unfortunately not able to actually see this in a particular slide. These were our targets 2018-19. These were the targets, and these were the targets that we've reached. So the slide on page 8, quite a bit of the funding, a vast amount of disbursements actually goes to Gauteng. Gauteng is certainly the economic capital of the country, or economic province, in terms of GDP support. But could we not possibly start to look at some kind of inversion investment or counter-cyclical investment, where you begin to look at some of the smaller provinces that actually need the investment, particularly where those smaller provinces have a higher proportion of unemployment? Because we continue to give funding to the baby that's making the loudest noise, financial noise possibly. You've mentioned that the leverage in the auto sector is some leverage of 1:5. For every one job created, there's another 5 either upstream or downstream, is that correct? And then an investment multiplier of some 10.1 also in the automotive industry. I mean, fantastic. But what about the other industries? What about the other sectors? What is the multiplier effect in the other sectors? So I'd like to know if any. And then just the page 28, you mentioned 500,000 jobs in terms of the agreement that you have with business in the next year. In the next 5 years. Oh, okay. So that's 100,000 or so plus per year. Could you just unpack in terms of how that is to be achieved? Thank you. Thank you, Jim.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair. I have just a few questions. With regard to Aspen, I see you've provided them some assistance. How do you feel about them sharing jobs? I heard just now that they are prepared to share jobs in Sandton and Pacific. What is the update there? Are you speaking to them, and why is it that your contribution is a major put in that regard? Secondly, I would like to know, when it comes to women, I see there's minimal women participation in terms of businesses that you're supporting. Do you have any idea, perhaps have you done a study to find out why it is that women are reluctant to come into some industries that may advance them in terms of business and ended up isolating themselves in terms of the economy. Also, I'm quite unhappy with, I've always said this, with the special economic zones. I feel like they should be closer to the people and not based where it's easier to make business. They should come to where the people are, which is your townships, your rural areas. I don't know if you have any plans besides the industrial park that takes special economic zones to the people, to not make them migrate to other cities for them to have better access to information. Lastly, on the slide page number eight, I want to know why is Northern Cape receiving such a small amount in terms of approval? Is it because there's no economy going there, or is it because there's just no initiatives from the people in the Northern Cape? Lastly, I want to know, you've given the Eastern Cape $3.9 billion. Is that yielding any results in terms of growth in the economy in the Eastern Cape? Yeah, those are my questions.
Thank you, Chair.
Can you have your mic on?
Thank you, Chair. I've got four questions, and I'll be short on it. The first one, with reference to page 6 or slide 6, graph on the right-hand side, where triple B status is mentioned. I just want to clarify, are those percentages amount of the or the portion of the budget spent or the number of businesses, because it's not specifically mentioned there. And then the second question is relation to page 8 or slide 8, summary of approvals per province. Just one example, if we take Limpopo for instance and Gauteng, and you look at the amounts invested versus the jobs created. Does this, the fact that Honourable Member Yaku mentioned here, where you take business to the people, is it more expensive to invest in certain areas because there's a huge difference, $246 million invested in Limpopo versus $3.6 billion, and the jobs created more or less the same, just to clarify that. And then the third question is with relation to the reference page of slide 25. One can only respond on what you see in front of you, and as far as this report is concerned, I must compliment the work as well, but what I want to know is there more in-depth reports available? How do you oversee the business that you actually assist? Is it audited? Does it show sustainable jobs created, market share improvement? And then the last question would be with reference to page 35, just a general question as far as exports are concerned. We're all aware of the fact that because of the currency situation of South Africa, which is currently more than 50 rand per dollar, that it's a very attractive export situation. Why is a fairly small amount of money invested in things, in incentives for export? Thank you, Chair.
Emma?
Thank you, Chair. Regarding Honourable Cuthbert's question on Aspen and the potential conflict of interest, does Aspen receive funding or is it a tax incentive? And then just we note the date of that your reporting period, but when if they enjoy either, when did it actually stopped, so that we can see if it was a conflict of interest or whether that question arises. We're also facing a huge job crisis, unemployment crisis, and you fund innovation, which normally, I think, logically leads in some cases to job losses, and you also fund job creating initiatives. So how do you, in your planning, how do you maintain that balance? Thank you, Chair.
And then,
thank you, Professor. Good morning to everyone. Chair, whilst we appreciate and applaud the good work done by this entity, Chair, if I may call it, we also want to check if they will extend in the coming financial years a full-scale support on the ocean's economy. The large ocean closer to the Eastern Cape, which is the largest ocean in fact, and compared with the small fund we extend to Gauteng, where there's no sea, which when you fund the Eastern Cape, the largest ocean, would create more jobs and improve the economic situation of that poor province, which was robbed of its human resource by other provinces, so that we can change the delivery pattern that we offer as a progressive government. Chairperson, again, I would love to see our examples, practical examples, whether the mineral beneficiation that we boast about is a refinery that has been established, or which, what type of a beneficiation is it? Because when we have been saying we are robbed of our minerals that are taken abroad without us having benefited as a country from our own underground wealth. Well, we need practical examples, not literature that sits there forever. There's a new new product, if I may say, the cannabis, which is the wealth of the East Polderland in the Eastern Cape. How would you ensure that you support that those farmers in the future? Because for us, it should be a gold mine for that poor province. And move away from the traditional, you know, businesses that you used to support. Because we need jobs, as we need you to assist us in job creation, as much as I wouldn't be able to explain. Chairperson, also I want to check, when are we expecting the second round of the revitalization of the industrial parks, which are the closest to the people? I understand SEZ. I don't think I must be convinced. It's not easy for us to take in SEZ closer to people, because our ports are down there, far away from the people. As I understand, our intention was that our production can be exported easily in the ports. I must clarify if I'm wrong. So for me, that question it's misplaced. I'm not saying, but as far as I'm concerned. Lastly, Chair, the unfriendly nature of your application for your incentives. How do you assist people to access them and help them and, you know, advocate? How do you do it? Because there's a lot of business out there that needs those incentives that they cannot accept or because of the unfriendly nature of your application. You offer these incentives to companies that you say you ensure that they don't share jobs between 3 and 5 years. What is a safety net? How do you ensure that they don't shed? How do you monitor that they don't shed those jobs within that specified time, so that we don't create this that I've seen in the report? That is, we create, for example, 1,000 jobs. We lose 500 of that 1,000. And we end up having saved half of what the jobs were created. How do you then ensure that those companies that you have assisted do not shed jobs after you've given them the support? Because that would be like sending a baboon to the maize field. You take two combs, and when you get at the end of the field, you have one under your arm. Thank you, Chair. I would be comfortable in a situation where members of this committee do not politicize the economy of the country. I know economy is political, but when you talk of Aspen beneficiation or conflict of interest with it, at this point in the presentation, I've not seen such. I've not observed it. I don't know where it comes from. And I wish we could not politicize this, because this is the life and death of our country. Thank you, Chair.
The problem you will have is that there are politicians in the room, and you won't be able to avoid political issues. Let me just say, on page carpet, I note your hand, on page 15, I think that's one that reflects on Aspen. In the presentation and issues explained in terms of this slide, its sense of progress. I'm sure in the report the discussion was about the project and the progress that we were able to make. So I would actually then take it back, not in a discussion of our committee, but for the presentation's sake, to say it may be difficult for us to ask a question. The support that was given did what was required. The company is doing very well. But I think the Honorable Cuthbert's issue that he's raising is saying funding by Aspen of the Mr. Ramaphosa campaign, in the way that he expressed it, is it not conflict of interest? So what actually is the suggestion on my part is that we may be asking someone a question which is wrong. I'm sure we can ask Aspen to check if ever they actually contributed and it was conflict of interest. But I'm sure for the departmental team that is here, it is an irrelevant issue. That's actually what I would say. But for members, if ever you want to engage on any other issue, politicizing, grandstanding seem to be part of the business we should be doing as members. It's part of the business we should be doing. But let me just say to the team, that's the approach I would suggest, that we actually pick it up like that. But if ever there's still an issue you want to raise, Cuthbert, can I actually allow you then to talk to that?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I appreciate it. I do disagree with Ms. Mantosh, and she's entitled to her view, but I think I'm entitled to my view as well, and I would like to know how taxpayers' money is being spent, because this is taxpayers' money that's raised through the fiscus and given as incentives to businesses to create jobs. And I'd like to know if there's any kind of a clientelistic relationship between people who are receiving incentives and those who are being, those who are contributing to campaigns. I mean, Aspen, and you can read a series of news reports, has a 2 billion rand contract with the Department of Health as well. And the very gentleman who is quoted here, Mr. Stavros Nikolaou, in this actual report, is the very man who is the one who was tasked with having given the donation to the CR17 campaign. Now, specifically, he didn't mention political parties or anything, and I mentioned President Ramaphosa in his individual capacity, because we're dealing with the state matter. And it is something that is currently in the purview of the public protector as well, so that's why I've raised the issue. So I would like the department to answer this particular thing, because I do believe that it is in public interest. And if it's not answered here, then I'm going to submit it as a written and an oral question in the House as well to be taken up further, because I would like an answer to that matter.
Can I just ask a question? On the basis of what I've just said, what's your take? I've made a suggestion when I was actually commenting on the same issue. I say the department did support ASPEN. ASPEN on their own contributed funds to the campaign of Mr. Ramaphosa. So I'm just saying, can you actually then direct your question to the right place? You may actually take it to Parliament as well and good. You can actually even ask the question to the President, which is in order, because that's your space. But in terms of the portfolio committee presentation we have before us, is it really relevant?
Chair, I do believe that it is relevant, because the DTI is a stakeholder of government. It has a relationship with ASPEN. There's a relationship between the President and ASPEN. So I think that it's fair game for us to actually ask those kinds of questions, because surely that would come into the frame of thinking when making a decision that costs hundreds of millions of rands to pump an incentive into a particular country. Oh, sorry, into a particular company. So that's how my mind, takes this particular issue. But, I imagine there are also differences of opinion, but I will continue to ask for it to be answered.
Okay, can I take Yako? You wanted to comment on the same issue? Then I'll take Montashe, and then I'll conclude on this matter, then we'll go back to the department to comment and respond to questions and clarity. Yako?
Thank you, Chair. I don't think we can be told by a member of the committee what we can and cannot ask for. We can't be told what questions are good and what questions are bad. We ask these questions because we want to know.
Yeah.
On the issue of SOEs, they should never be centered around one thing, which is food. They should be taken to where the people are. So, Honourable Mandash, you can't be telling us that you're asking silly questions or we can't be asking certain questions. We ask them for a certain reason, and it is up to our constituencies to know for us to give them feedback. So I don't think it's fair, and I don't think it's respectful to the rest of the members for us to be told that what we seek when we seek clarity on something, that they are stupid or they shouldn't be asked in the first place. They shouldn't be.
Okay, Natasha,
is there another question? No, Chairperson, just unfortunately, I said my understanding, which I need to be clarified on, SEZs are put at sport for easy export purposes. I never said anyone is stupid. I don't think I have that capacity to judge people. Chair, I wanted to find out from the from Honourable or the DDG whether ASPEN received funding or it benefited in the 12I tax incentive. That's one clarity.
Okay. Though I think on those, it's actually issues which I was trying to separate. Can I actually say maybe to Honourable Cuthbert and Honourable Yako, I would suggest that in terms of the entity sponsored or supported or getting initiative in terms of support, what can be accounted for in terms of the committee engagement. The entity is the next part on the resources, how they use it, and who they actually contribute to. I think it will make things easier to be able to say it will be good to ask the entity directly. That's what I'm suggesting. Or maybe ask the presidency directly if ever there's issue of conflict of interest. Because on my part here, I see this as a complete presentation. They were given support. They've done quite well. There is actually progress. So on the point of view on my part, I would just say it may be them that we can ask the question if ever not, if they have noticed, if ever there's conflict of interest, or we can be able to actually raise a question to the executive or the president to actually question that issue relating to conflict of interest. So I will just say on that question, I'll say let's pass it. Yako, you're right, we can talk to, it's our committee, this one. We can raise any issue, but as a chair, that's a suggestion I'm putting across. And for officials, I think that's the part, I think, please leave it. It's an issue that we may have to discuss at certain levels. But for the portfolio committee and the information you're putting before us, I think it might be quite important for me to say it's irrelevant. Then we can proceed. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I'll then deal with the questions that have been have come from members. I'll start by just also appreciating the fact that members are appreciating the work that we do for public servants. That means a lot because of some of the pressures that at times we face, and it would be good to take a report of positive appreciation by members back to the division. So for that, thank you to the members. Chair, on the maybe without going into it, just to say as a our general approach to the support that we offer, that one of the things that we don't do, because it is not relevant to the work that we have to do, is do an audit of political or otherwise alignment of companies that we support. We follow a guideline that is published in terms of who qualifies and who does not qualify. And based on that guideline, we are in a way bound to then contract and engage with the companies in that manner. So we wouldn't go too much into asking any other issue except for a project in question and the types of outcomes that we are requiring from that project. So on the issue that was raised with regards to the GBS, we're doing a whole lot better in this sector. We didn't really lose much to India and Mauritius because our proposition is slightly different. Unlike India, we are not saying come to South Africa for the lowest wage that you can ever pay a worker. We say come to South Africa for value that you can get, including the quality of labor that you are going to get when you come to South Africa. It's a slightly different proposition. So the types of companies that we would attract are the companies that would not want to align themselves to sweatshop type activities. They would know that when they are here in South Africa, there are laws and ways of doing things that we would insist on. So our value proposition is different to India in those respects. It is also different to India in terms of some of the services that we go into. And to give an example, when we do our survey, global survey of where South Africa is placed in this sector, one of the things that the companies are telling us is that they wouldn't go to India for client service because of the nature of the Indian society, where you have to tell them this is how you take care of the client. That if a problem arises that is outside the script, they are unable to take care of it. And they say that's the reason they come to South Africa, because somebody in Khayelitsha is better suited to serve someone in London and answer to their problems than somebody sitting in India. So our proposition is about value. It is not about low wages. Then on the AIS approvals, we're back on track. I can confirm. The last meeting that we've had is in the last 2 weeks. The committee that makes this decision has been duly appointed. So I think we, as far as that program is concerned, all is going as what it should be. On the 12i allowances, which was raised here, the issues are not about all the approvals for 12i. It was just a certain of the transactions which were complex, and some of the complexities members have shared here. One of which is when you're creating jobs in one project but shedding jobs in another project. How do we deal with that? Then those types of projects, you have to kind of take them off your normal line so that you are dealing with them specifically, so that members don't come and then accuse us of supporting companies that are shedding jobs. And it is those transactions that decisions had to be made, and special commitments secured from those companies to make sure that the value of the incentive includes securing jobs for the people who were projected to lose jobs, and that the state is not seen as being part of projects that shed jobs, which would be a very bad thing, I'm sure with that. So that those were the ones where there were delays. And the issue of the Black Fund and how it's going to work, this is going to be run by the auto sector itself, and yes, it's going to work as similarly to the equity equivalent type program. There will be some monitoring that will be done by the department, but it is not going to be part of our incentive program as such going forward. Fronting, and I have to be frank on this one, the question was asked about how we're dealing with fronting. Fronting is becoming a big issue, and it's almost even a big drag on our processing of applications, where just because of the untruths that are told around ownership, around who will get the revenues at the end of transactions, we have to employ a lot more resources into our processing activities. And this is an issue that we are increasingly seeing, not just fronting, also general misrepresentation, where companies will come, they will want to promise us the world, and they deliver very little, and now they want to insist that they are due for payment. And what we see increasingly is that we have to be defending our decisions in court in order to safeguard the public purse, where people have learned we will not be able to process those types of application. Be it a lie about ownership, be it a lie about your production process, even who you employ. Because in some instances, the expectation is that you're going to employ people that are eligible for employment in the South African context. But when you do inspection, you find people that are not eligible for employment being employed, and then now we are put in a situation where we have to defend the integrity of the program. We're working with all our DSIs, both nationally and provincially, and NEF is one of the DSIs we've worked with. Of course, their scale of funding, or rather number of projects they funded, is not as many as we would have liked, for various reasons that NEF has to deal with. And I think the commitment that we can make is that maybe in the next report, one of the areas that we will reflect on is our collaboration with DFIs and some of the things that we have put in place to make sure that some of the requirements are much more standardized across all the funders in government. And in that way, I think it will also deal with the question that was asked by Honorable Mantash around the unfriendly nature of our application process and how we intend to improve that. We didn't come with a quarter one or quarter two report because we come to Parliament only with audited documents. And what we are presenting to you is what the Auditor General has vetted as true. So we will come back in the following year with an incentive report, again, that is vetted by the Auditor General. We're going right now, I think in a couple of, in 4 months, we're going to be finalizing an audit process with the Auditor General for this current financial year. So our preference when it comes to the detail of the incentive is to then present to members what has been audited by the AG. That is the reason why we didn't bring the quarter one and quarter two incentive detail report. But of course the department does provide a Parliament quarterly update on the work of the department. In terms of target set, we didn't present it because we didn't want to break. We've done quite well. We set our I apologize, it's your second time. And we set ourselves a target of 15 billion for the projects that we were going to support, and then we ended up supporting 31.3 billion. So we doubled our target, and that is just based on the nature of investments that we received, which would have either grown in a way that initially when we did our projections, it didn't seem like they would grow in that way. So we exceeded that target. On our disbursement, we are on target because we can't overpay beyond our budget. And on the number of companies also supported, we are in range. So I think what we're trying to show on those highlights, I'll call them KPIs, in terms of what we've approved, we have disbursed, projected investment, and actual investment, was just how we have done relative to the targets that we had set ourselves. Then on the issue of local procurement, which was also asked, this is a priority across all our incentives, local procurement, that there must be local procurement. And I have to add here, our measure of local procurement is quite simple. As long as it is manufactured in South Africa, we will regard it as a local product. Then counter-cyclical investment. This is, I think the question was asking why our investments are following where the industrial structure is, as opposed to creating new nodes of industrial development. Here we're trying to address this with the industrial park and the SEZ, trying in those underrepresented areas to create environments where enterprises can grow, mature, and also receive support. The map that you see is actually a map that reflects areas where we have received requests for support. We don't do project packaging. An entrepreneur comes to us with a packaged project, and then we work with the entrepreneur on the basis of that. So we're hoping that one of the outcomes of the industrial park and the SEZ program is that we will be able to start going into this underrepresented areas a lot more. And another question related to that was asked on why the investment outside of Gauteng seems to be more, I would say, there seem to be less job intensive than those that are in Gauteng. Is it a reflection of whether it's more expensive to invest there? Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that when you invest in a rural place somewhere in Limpopo, we have to also still assist you with the road to access the main road, and all of those things then come with additional costs that would otherwise not be there when you are investing in housing. know in the sense that based on the type of project, if you are in the agro-processing space and you are in Limpopo, you're probably likely going to create more jobs than if you were in some high-tech environment, even if you are located in Gauteng. So there are a number of considerations to that. You see, it's not a matter of just the expense related to the investment. It's also the nature of the activity that the company is going to undertake. We do look at multipliers. I highlighted the auto's multiplier just to give members a sense of why we keep on saying the auto sector is important. We have multipliers for agro-processing, for the clothing and textile, and various other sectors. It is the basis upon which we will then land on a sector to say this sector is a job-intensive sector that we need to support. So it does go into part of our considerations when we come up with a program. The GBS sector, the 500,000 jobs that we've agreed with the industry around, this will be jobs that will be in client care, in financial services, in IT services, in legal services, where a person sitting here in South Africa could be drawing a contract between contracting parties in London and the US. And that is just based on the fact that not only do we have, according to the people that are located in South Africa, not only do we have one of the better crop of graduates in the world, but we also have a traditional affinity to some of these markets that allow South Africa to be able to do those types of activities a lot better than if it were done in other localities. In actual fact, our selling point for GBS is the quality of our skills, which is a different discussion from what we would have domestically about how bad the skill system, or rather how bad the quality of people they are who are coming from our skills development system. You talk to any of our outsourcers, especially those that are doing complex jobs, the first thing they say is the total talent that is found in South Africa, which is actually quite scarce everywhere else around the world. So on the issue of women participation, we were involved with the department, with our colleagues in the presidency, on how do we increase women participation in industry and in the manner in which we provide support. I think one of the things that are an area of concern. It's not that women are not having the similar opportunities. Is that because of sometimes how we structure our funding, it becomes a bit of a challenge. Let me explain. It is difficult for a woman to get funding from the banks than for a man to get funding from the banks. And it's a reality we have seen it. So when we say we must have a cost-sharing grant, the weight of that rule then lays heavily on a woman than it would lay for a man who is able to raise funds from multiple sources, which is what a woman can be able to do. And just based on the fact that it's a woman, not having to do with anything about what the project is about. We're looking into this, and when the minister presents his plan For 2021, there will be a reflection on how we are going to deal with this issue following the study that was done that showed to us that we've got a big gap in financing of women-led projects. As this is closer to the people, our approach has been slightly different, in the sense that we are saying we need to create a pathway to an SEZ based on current economic activity in a locality. So we are looking at how do you grow the current industrial park into a special economic zone, as opposed to come into this locality, come up with a new initiative, and then you eventually see people just moving from this part to this part in order to get this benefit and that benefit. In that way, it minimizes the objectives of what we want to achieve. So we want to see the industrial parks being part of that value chain going forward. And I think in a way I've answered the question about why the Northern Cape is receiving a small amount of money. We're not receiving projects from the Northern Cape to the similar scale as from other provinces. With the Eastern Cape, I mean, the mainstay of the Eastern Cape economy is the auto sector. Now, the question can be asked, what will Uternate be without VW? What will East London be without Mercedes-Benz? And Durban without Toyota? So those I think in that way, it then helps us to see why some of the sectors are important, because they're areas that help to conglomerate and build up economic activity around. Because you have a VW, then you have component manufacturers, then you have sub-component manufacturers, and so the value chain goes on. On the triple BEE, the question was asked on whether what we are showing there are numbers or percentages. It's percentages. So it's a percentage split of the entire pot of the companies that that we have supported. How do we oversee businesses that we support? A very important question, and it's becoming increasingly important as things are getting tight in the economy, and the issue that I raised, where there's a lot of misrepresentation that we are now picking up in our system from companies. What we've done and we need to do more of is improve our inspection capabilities. We do have inspectors. Every payment, before it is made, there must be an inspection, especially on all the investment incentives. So in that way, with the inspections, we make sure that we are paying for real things that are on the shop floor. And then included to that, we've got a monitoring and evaluation unit whose job is to do post-investment monitoring and evaluation. We do our export support compared to the other support, I think on, in rent terms seems to be small, but again it's this issue of what is it that we are trying to resolve in the export sector. And here we, you would be a company that needs to improve your competitiveness, then that support, you're not going to see it in export support, you're going to see it in manufacturing. Export support is only about exposing these companies to international markets. So because of the type of activity that we are supporting, hence the scale of the budget. When Aspen was approved and whether that approval was informed by any other consideration, I can come here with no fear of any contradiction that we made that approval based on the merit of the case, and at the point when that approval was made, we had no interest on any other issue that could have been happening around Aspen. We were interested in the project at hand. On the innovation and the balance between jobs and losses on innovation, it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one where buying machines sometimes means replacing people. But in some instances, when you invest in areas such as the SPY program, where we are creating our own innovation internally, we are then putting down seeds for future commercialization, which will then create jobs. There are areas where we're not going to be able to stop innovation because it will shed jobs. But what we sought to do, and the Honourable Cuthbert raised the issue of the 12i applications. What we sought to do is to then try and get an agreement with the companies on other areas where they will supplement the jobs that they may be losing in one area. The support for the ocean economy, this one is another exciting area that we will be increasingly going into. We started with our aquaculture support support program, but there are a number of master plans that are being developed. Now, based on what those master plans expose, we will then be developing incentives to the extent that financial support is a constraint to growth. Canvas, we're looking forward to supporting Canvas because we're seeing our competitor countries doing it very well. But there are other issues. We are talking money. Here there are issues of legislation about growers and all of those things. There are also the issues about how do you take it to market. Now, once the legislation is resolved, we've got full confidence that our entrepreneurs in South Africa will be coming up with projects that would be cannabis based in the health sector. We've seen projects in the health sector. Some people are looking at it in other sectors, including not just cannabis but hemp, and how we can use it for textile, for light material, and all those types of industrial activities that generally are not here in South Africa, but around the world, we see most economies coming in. The reason I'm saying we're excited about it is because we're seeing our competitor countries already, they're putting a lot of money into it, which would then mean for manufacturers to have a chance, we are going to have to do similar or even better. And we are watching that space. We're not letting go of the industrial parts. I think the DDG is responsible for the SEZ and industrial park support will present to the committee, but we're looking at 26 parks we will be supporting going forward. The application forms and their unfriendliness, I think it's we are growing as we are going. What makes it difficult is that at some point you end up making rules for the bad actors, because it's the bad actors that are your worst enemy. And then in that, the good actors are caught up. So we have to be inspecting an application before we even support, because we've learned people lie on their application. We have to be going to the Department of Labor verifying that the people they say they've employed, because companies have lied to us. And all of those rules are the rules that make it cumbersome for the applicant to access the support. I am sure there may be one or two areas that I haven't covered here. There's a reason why the ladies are here. My colleagues will perhaps maybe answer anything that I haven't covered.
I'm sure they'll indicate if you indicate, we will take yours. Any other team member wants to contribute on the responses? If you think they are duly covered, then we will actually proceed. I'm not sure if ever the members would like us. I'm just looking at the time we have. We can look at if ever there are any further comments members have got, we can actually try and round up on that. We'll take, I see one, two hands, Cuthbert, Yako, Mulder, Mantash. Okay, in that order.
Thanks very much, Chair. Just two comments. The first one is that the example that I used to relate South Africa to India and Mauritius is on the basis of them being Anglophone countries and the fact that it's predominantly Anglophone-speaking nation that uses this kind of full-time facility. So I think the tangent that DDG went on about slave wages and the like was slightly misplaced. And the second point that I wanted to make, Chair, is that even though you said that the question mustn't be answered or gone around, we have received a response from the department regarding them not taking into account the political alignment of people that they may grant incentives, either tax incentives to or transfers.
I just want to note, I think the DDG's explanations are a bit higher grade for me. I have not received the answers that I would have liked to receive in terms of my questions. I'm not satisfied, but maybe it's because of my understanding. I don't know. I just want to note that I am not covered in terms of my questions.
I thought you would repeat the area which you thought were not responded to.
None of that. For me, I'm asking questions in terms of Aspen losing jobs, and I didn't get that answer fully. I'm asking a question why the special economic zones are where they are. For me, you can't say that because they were centered around ports and industrial parks. It doesn't make sense to me. Is there any alternative way in which you think you can get closer to the people instead of them coming to you? That's what I wanted to know. I'm not getting a sense of answers in terms of why the Northern Cape is not getting so much money because they're not coming to you. What are you doing about capacitating the Northern Cape in terms of them growing economically? Isn't that your role as a department? So I'm not finding joy in the answers that I was asking. Thank you.
Well, the good thing that you repeated some of them, maybe express them differently, maybe we'll have to take those comments, Mantasha.
Chair, I didn't hear the DDG comment respond to my question of them extending incentive to the longer ocean. Maybe I missed it.
Incentives are one of the tools so available to support the competitiveness of the industrial base as South Africa undertakes to grow the manufacturing sector through the development and expansion of the upstream and downstream industry. So I thought maybe let me just raise that because it actually speaks to the issues that we're supposed to actually engage on. But further, I think it will be quite important that through the beneficiation of its natural resources, because I'm sure manufacturing should be done here, and make sure that at least we create opportunities and jobs. The last part which I thought will be important to say, this is critical to ensure that South Africa produces more value-added products and services and not a net exporter of raw materials. So that one part which one thinks it's very, very crucial for us to, you know, highlight more all the time, and a net importer of finished goods. Because, you know, beneficiations, when you look at the mining sector, it is actually a bit of a challenge. Further, you actually look at the issue of facilitation of the growth of the economy and creation of decent jobs. So those are the things which we can't skip, but we'd like to see how you managing to be able to keep us focused in that space. Can we take then comments from Sorry.
Chair, thank you. The two questions that I need to be clarified, and I know you guys missed it, correct me if I'm wrong. The one is, I ask how is the support to the companies overseas, is it audited to be sustainable, larger market share, etc.? And the second one was about exports. The amount of money being invested in export-related sector. because of it being a rather attractive sector. Thank you.
Okay. Back to DCG and team.
Thank you for the questions. I think I'll just go back to the issue of special economic zones being closer to the people. The reason why we are saying industrial parks that are already closer to the people must be the pathway to a special economic zone. That means use the industrial park and build it up to a point where it is a special economic zone. It's our approach to bring the special economic zones closer to the people. We can't move all where it is and put it elsewhere. It is there, and that is how the program was initially thought. What I'm saying is we are mutating our thinking as we are implementing this project, which is exactly what industrial policy is. You learn as you go. You don't want to have a perfect solution from day one. So what we're saying now is the industrial parts have to be a focal point of the work that we do, growing them to make sure that they become the special economic zones. And when we do that, just as an example, then this industrial park would be closer to the people. That's how I was trying to bring it across. And I apologize that perhaps it wasn't as clear. On the issue of the ocean economy. When we develop incentives, because money is generally not the only thing that enterprises require to be competitive and sustainable, we would be guided by a number of documents, a number of areas of work that has already taken place. Mm-hmm. So with the ocean economy, one of the things that we are looking at is some of the master plans that will be coming out. This is in addition to aquaculture, which we are already doing. Aquaculture being a program where marine species are grown or farmed, and then those species can then be sold in a sustainable way, which also helps create jobs. And we also are looking into the opportunities beyond just aquaculture, algae, and various other products that come from the ocean environment, which could be supported. But what is important is whether the reason that the industry is not growing in that sector is money. Because if you pour money just because there's an opportunity without doing that assessment, what we have and we have experienced is that those enterprises tend to die. But for those enterprises where there is a market and there are issues with working capital to be able to support an order, that is where we know we have to intervene. Because by providing that working capital, that seed capital that helps a person put together their raw materials, get products to market, we are then assisting that company to be sustainable. So it's those that is the reason why we wait until a master plan is developed, and then we have a unit in the division who will now go and look on the scale of the challenges in the sector. Where does finance fall? If finance is not a major impediment, we won't do an incentive. But if it is a major impediment, we will then look at developing an incentive in a way that doesn't create dependency, but it creates a pathway to sustainability for the businesses. And then on beneficiation. Now, beneficiation we would do, again, it's companies that will come to us with a credible business case. for a particular sector. We had funds that we had set aside, I think, for gold beneficiation. We've now expanded it to diamond and even to all mineral beneficiation. And it is out of those that certain of the projects are now starting to come up around platinum. There's a company that is looking to develop fuel cells based on platinum. And this is the type of beneficiation that we are talking about and we would report on, because those are the projects that we have supported. And with that support comes this requirement of creation of jobs, which then links the incentive to the creation of jobs. So if the jobs are shared for whatever reason, then as per our initial agreement with whatever entity, we will then have to withdraw the support that we had offered. How we oversee support, we oversee the work that we do, and we make sure that in the reports that we provide to members are accurate. The work that we do is felt in the economy. We include in our processes a physical inspection process where a person has to go and inspect that what is on paper is actually on the ground. That is one leg of how we oversee what we do. We then add to that a monitoring and evaluation function that goes post-investment to go and check whether the jobs that we were promised are still there, the exports that we were promised are now materializing, any of those commitments that would have been made or as an undertaking by an entrepreneur. Market share, GDP, they all become almost like aggregates. Indicators that we don't really go into as much. We just say, as company A, you said to us, this will increase your production capability from 100 to 1,000. Has your production capability changed? And if you haven't met that 1,000, how are you getting to the 1,000? You would have said to us, and when I get to that 1,000, then I'm taking my product locally this much and internationally this much. Then we go and we check those things, because those are the numbers that we can attach to that company as part of the commitment. That is how we do the monitoring and evaluation. And part of that evaluation process then looks at the entirety of a scheme, whether this scheme is delivering according to its objectives. We do what we call rapid assessment across a number of the schemes, and we also will do evaluations across some of the schemes. This will tell us whether we need to change rules, whether there's certain things that we need to amend, certain ways in which we need to improve administration. That is how the evaluation is then done. All the export support. The issue here is that for export support, we would generally support companies by way of creating their flyers, being able to participate in a marketing event of sorts. That will be a different cost basis than the cost of buying a machine. So when you look at it on the book, it looks like the support is not much. But the support is now tailored to the activities that we would like to support. These are air freights for people to take their samples across, people to establish contacts across. So it's kind of low cost, but important for the companies, but low cost activities which have high numbers of people going through. So when you look at it, you're going to see that when you compare this to where we are buying machines, it seems like our support is about buying machines, but it's actually tailored to the nature of the activity that we are supporting. Now the issue with the rand, and I was quite happy the honourable member raised it, is that when it changes so quickly, and it is so kind of it fluctuates so much that for you to change your production process because the rent today is 15 rand and you're expecting to go to a market in 6 weeks, it's a very it takes time for people to adjust to the currency fluctuations for export purposes. But for those that are exporting, it becomes a boom immediately, and then it leads to other activities that are taking place. Exporters are quite happy about the level of the currency at the moment. It just is the nature of the fluctuation and the frequency of that fluctuation that becomes a bit of a problem for planning. I'm not sure.
We will just proceed and asking Chief Director Osman, any further comments you'd like to, I'll just follow through. If ever there's anything you'd like to contribute or add on, can I have you on?
Thank you, Chair. Just on the members' input on accessibility, I think one of the things that we would be exploring going further is to try and see how we can use other mediums to allow people to access our incentives. For example, we know that everybody has a cell phone. Sometimes they might not be able to go to the DTI website, but everybody definitely has a cell phone. So looking at ensuring that when we do put a guideline on the DTI website, it's also a guideline that can be accessed through a cell phone facility or another media that will be easier for our applicants. So we know that sometimes the jargon that we put in our forms might be difficult for people to understand, but we also have a section that interfaces with clients to explain as simply as possible what our guidelines or the application form is intending, so that they have a better understanding and that application process is made simpler for them.
Yeah, I'd say Susan Mangole.
Thanks, Chair. I think just to emphasize what the DCJ has said, in terms of the Northern Cape, we part of the 26 industrial parks that are still coming. One of them is proposed in the Northern Cape. We are also partnering with the provincial DFIs and the provincial economic development in terms of creating awareness on the incentive. The second issue is with regards to our inspection. Our inspection also includes the verification auditors. It also includes the consulting engineer, especially where the investment is big and it's a complex production. We send the consulting engineer to go and confirm that those machines are indeed in production. Thank you.
Then that's Shinga, Chief Director. No, that's what's happening there. Someone is using a hammer. But they may not know that we're seated. They may not know that we're seated here, but they are not talking to us, you see. It's just something else happening. You on the floor. Chief Director.
Thank you, Chair. I think one constitute just be on innovation and technology. And as DDG has rightfully said, that when you create jobs somewhere, you lose them somewhere. Mm-hmm. And we are trying to create that balance. And one of the things as a department that we are focusing on now is the grassroots innovations, which are taking place mostly in rural and township areas. And through that, we have been visiting different provinces, particularly those which are in peripheral areas. Last year we visited Limpopo, Eastern Cape, and Mpumalanga, and we've been able to find new innovation. And we find that some of those businesses that exist in those areas, they might not necessarily benefit in the existing incentives, and we see a very low number of applications. But because they are small and they are still growing, they will be able to benefit from the grassroots innovation. And we already have got a scheme which is targeting those small businesses. And around the cannabis, there have been two workshops already addressing cannabis industry. There are challenges around the regulation, but there is interest, and we are already working with our agro-processing unit to ensure that we put some incentives and support mechanisms in place.
Maybe to, while he's still there, on the cannabis one, we do understand that it's more than one department portfolio. So there might be a few. It might actually just be helpful to get sense of how the coordination is and of which parts, because that's quite important. As a committee, we're even thinking there might be a possibility of a joint committee and some actually presentation that will actually help us get good sense of how progress is on the basis of cannabis. I'm not sure if you can comment on that.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, for the past two workshops, the departments that have been participating, it was DSI, it was Department of Agriculture, Department of Environmental Affairs, Department of Health, and the Department of Trade and Industry. And just scouting how big the industry is, what type of products exist, and there is already a coordinating committee that has been set up, and I think they'll be looking in for an issue.
I think maybe for the secretariat, because we're talking about departments, and we talk about an interdepartmental team, maybe we can actually ask secretariat just to help follow through so that we can just see what space of engagement can we have as an opportunity as a department, as a portfolio committee, or maybe a sense of that joint portfolio committee discussion, maybe out of that kind of task. It will be quite crucial. Let me take the last member of the team, Nontombi. Are you having any comments on this specific one? Okay. Can I then ask the DDG to conclude so that we can then proceed?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to members for the comments and the observations. There are those that we will be taking into account when we develop the incentive report for the following year, so that some of the information that members would like to see in that report is already in the report for members' consideration. So thank you very much, Chair.
Let me just say the purpose of today's meeting was to familiarize the committee with various incentives which you actually have spoken to and offer an issue relating to assets performance of these initiatives. Because obviously we need to look at the report 2018-19 annual incentive report, but further I think issue relating to performance up till September last year. So I'm just saying the purpose for today's meeting was just to try and interact on that space. There might actually be issues that we may have to follow through beyond this, but at this stage I think with the time we have before us and the opportunity to actually be able to engage, thanks very much for your contribution. And I think we can conclude and pick up on the next issue. Okay. We do have a program circulated to members. If we can actually then pull on that. So I think there's a proper one that is actually circulated to members. In the proposed changes, which we had from the previous one we had before us, I think there was an issue relating to the request of engaging the minister, particularly around the implication of the SONA. in terms of actually making sure, because we had the date of the 3rd of March, and we thought it will actually have that date, because prior engagement was on the 10th, which was actually suggested. So when you look at your program, yes.
If I understand correctly, so obviously this is not in color, but all the stuff that was highlighted in yellow were the additions to the program.
Yes. Yes. So I think that's what we actually adding, because we did actually make changes. So the one we sent to you electronically was just to say this is what is proposed. We thought you'll have a look at it, and when we meet now, you can actually just give an indication. So we are on the 25th, which is today, we do actually have the one for tomorrow. There is actually the briefings we have in the MISA and SANAS. So that's the one we have tomorrow. And just on today and tomorrow, can I just then proceed, MacPherson? Then when I'm done, cut that.
No more.
So I'm making you twin brothers. And let me just say, on the 3rd, we do actually have the briefing by the Minister on SONA and budget. So I think the issue of the briefing of the DTI, EDD third quarter financial and non-financial performance. So the next one is what we postponed in the past week. We actually put on the 4th, we requested that we proceed with the meeting on the 4th. The next one will be the 10th of March, the briefing by the NLC. And I think we can be able to actually consider. On the previous one, we say consider minutes, because we're hoping that we can be able to adopt minutes of the committee on the next one to have the previous one. It's actually highlighted at the bottom. So 11th, we actually do have the proposed briefing by DTI National Treasury on measures to ensure compliance with local content requirements and the verification thereof. And the issue of ITEC, third quarter financial and non-financial performance on the 11th. So we do have the 17th, strategic and annual performance briefing by the DTI. The last one will be the 18th in terms of the briefing by the Minister and Development of the Steel and Ferrochrome Industry, as well as MESMAT. And the point that actually came through on that discussion was saying there may be multi-sector that will actually be coming up on similar issue. We're talking about issue of challenges of jobs, an issue of actually stability in terms of the different sectors. So we highlight these specific ones. There might be an issue where maybe the minister might deem it necessary to actually give more information on the same line of challenges the country faces or the companies to be able to share with us the information around the issues. So let's actually just check then with members because this is what we thought the members will actually confirm and agree that we proceed in the same way. And if ever there may be questions or clarities, we actually can pick it up on there. Let's take Custard and then Montashe. Any other?
Okay. Thanks, Chair. Chair, I propose that we adopt the program. I'm glad to see the additions that we've asked for, and we appreciate the fact that when we do request these things, the meetings are made available.
So there's a mover of documentation. You wanted to comment?
Chairperson, I was not against this program's adoption. I'm just wondering, the portfolio committee to to consider looking adding to this program. I don't know where, because all the data are full up. There's a crisis in the sugar industry, and I think we can't keep quiet and not attend to it, as it will have a negative impact on the economic status of food performance. The issue of the closure of the open mill. I propose that we may turn for it. I don't know where, I have no specific case, but I think we need to get closer to that space.
So I think there is then a seconder to Cuthbert, which is Matashe Mulder.
Chair, thank you. If I just might add, let's not also forget the specific request of the challenges of the cement industry. The cement industry.
This meeting?
No, for future.
Oh,
cement.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
So maybe if in passing, if I can just get to confirm, it's going to be the 18th March meeting. The multi-sectoral part, I think, Honorable Mantash, the issue you're raising, we were thinking, because it does fit in the category of issues, we may actually want to extend. I'm just raising as a point, because it's a point of sharing of the information at the sense of the challenge of sustainability. Sugar would actually fit in terms of the multi-sector with those kinds of challenges. So we actually maybe highlight that that might be helpful. If it can be accommodated, or we can get good sense of the profile around across the sectors, it actually can work well for us as well. Unless maybe there are further issues, can I just say tomorrow, when we look at this committee business, the program has been agreed to, is adopted. Tomorrow, I think we will have to look at the minutes. And I would actually suggest through the secretary that they just sent the copies of the minutes to all of us. There is actually also the oversight visit. I'm working with the secretary to be able to see that we can be able to have a look at that. So we hope to, in the program, bring in issue of processing our minutes, which is record of our proceedings, in a way that at least we don't actually end up with a huge pile, but in every meeting that we actually send you a copy before, and on the day you will actually be able to actually endorse or make corrections on the basis of implementation of that program. So can I go back to the program of today's meeting? Because that actually takes us to the item of 1036 to 1050, which we have actually just done. And now we actually at the point where maybe we can request that we try and actually conclude our meeting, because the committee business is actually understood and agreed to. And as closing remarks, I think on my part, I think it might actually be quite helpful that we follow through on some of the issues, particularly the joint committees, because the NCOP side, we haven't actually had any structured link. And I thought it might actually be quite important, because there are very important issues that are actually coming through. So as a committee, one would like just to have a member suggestion. It's not a thing that I'm raising now, but just to make sure that at least our NCOP, because we are a parliament of the two houses, and in reality we should actually be able to have a program that incorporates the sectoral parts, because we are an economic cluster member, which actually should be able to assist us to have interaction with our colleagues across the different spaces that we're in. Can I conclude the meeting, and thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.